Get ready for a week-long celebration of music, community, and fabulous fun with Joy Radiothon 2024. Joy has the largest collection of rainbow podcast content in the world, and you can help keep us out loud and proud by donating during Joy Radiothon 2024. Just go to joy.org.au/radiothon. Mark it in your calendars because Joy Radiothon returns June 1st to 7th. And remember, we all flourish with joy.
Bored of too many ads and dull, meaningless chat? We've got neither. Joy Drive, smart, fun radio.
After making it through the pandemic and then the difficulty of getting an appointment with a mental health professional, many of us have turned to mental health apps to fill the gap. So you go to any app store and there are so many mental health apps available. Well, how do we know which ones are genuine and which ones could be doing more harm than good? Well, Jeannie Marie Patterson is a professor of law at the University of Melbourne, joins us on the line. Jeannie, welcome back to Drive.
Oh, thanks for having me.
What are the risks of just downloading any mental health app?
Well, the risks range from you pay money for a product that does nothing for you and in the process takes all your data to downloading an app that can make your mental health worse.
So potentially some of them can make it worse.
We've heard, this is our current research, but we've heard a number of stories, more than, you know, a few about people for whom the apps haven't worked and have triggered quite adverse outcomes.
Are qualified mental health professionals, are they working behind the apps, or can anyone essentially develop a mental health app and put it on the market?
This is precisely the problem. Anyone can develop a mental health app and put it on the market, and mental health professionals are sometimes involved in developing the apps and sometimes not.
But is there any way of knowing when one is behind the app, or we have no idea?
Well, this is a dilemma. There's a number of places people can go to see rankings of apps, but unfortunately those rankings are generally on a range of different things. So you might find a ranking on privacy, you might find a different ranking on usability, which goes to the design of the interface, and you might find another ranking on how many scientific studies are said to be behind the app. But none of those tell you about the veracity of the app or whether who and how the mental health professionals are involved. And even the apps that have mental health professionals involved, sometimes in the work we've done, aren't the best products of all anyway. I think that the question might be the ones that are for profit and the ones that aren't, actually.
So you just mentioned privacy. I mean, we would divulge a lot of personal information to a mental health app. How can we be sure that this information is protected and is not being used for other potential purposes?
Well, it's the same thing as finding out whether the mental health app is actually validated by a professional. It's quite hard. And what we've seen is that people assume if you go to a mental health professional, they're bound by duties of confidentiality. So they're looking after what you say and they're looking after your data. But if you're using a commercially provided app, the people who make that app probably aren't selling your data. That's illegal in most jurisdictions. But what they may be doing is using that data for targeted advertising, gaining commissions from selling other products to you via the app, and also using that app to work out how to improve their own product and make it more usable, which I would say doesn't mean better, it means more addictive.
We're chatting with Jeannie Marie Patterson, Professor of Law at the University of Melbourne, about mental health apps and the downfalls and how to best choose one. What about, we're in an age where we're seeing ChatGPT-4 take off, artificial intelligence is going through the roof. Are we seeing artificial intelligence being incorporated into mental health apps and therefore potentially the advice that we're getting is based on an algorithm?
That is such a good question. So most of the mental health apps are using an algorithm to make recommendations. Many of them are using the same kind of algorithm that Netflix uses. to decide what sort of viewing you'd like. Many of the apps will promote particular meditations or mindfulness exercises based on an algorithm where they predict your preferences. Other apps are using chatbots to give therapeutic advice, and often that therapeutic advice is based on, you know, well-established psychological practices like cognitive behavioural therapy. And those chatbots are generally not ChatGPT. They're generally what we call rule-based chatbots. So they've been pre-programmed by a human only to give certain responses. And then we're starting to see a new wave of ChatGPT or equivalent technology-informed chatting friends, which may not actually be applying psychological methods, though you wouldn't know that from the publicity for them.
I find this quite frightening, actually. As someone who has used a psychologist, and I love seeing my psychologist and just to work through things, I find this quite frightening that an algorithm could potentially, I suppose, apply a cookie cutter approach to therapy and potentially miss some vital clues and information that could signify something significant.
This is precisely the concern. So when I said these chatbot therapists apply established psychological methods and processes like cognitive behaviour therapy, and I'm going to say here I am not a psychologist, so what I'm going to say comes from talking to my colleagues, the psychologists. So when the apps apply cognitive behavioural therapy, they're applying therapies that work in a therapeutic relationship between two humans. And what we've got when we're looking at mental health apps is there's an intermediary, and that intermediary is an app. In fact, there is no human therapist on the other side except very remotely. And so strategies and processes and techniques that work when we have two humans, a therapist, and I like talking to a therapist too, don't necessarily apply when it's being applied by a chatbot. And this is precisely our concern. And the studies that are being done on this are very early. Now, maybe we can make this technology work, but we certainly don't know this yet.
And also, I mean, when you're in a therapy session, sometimes things can percolate to the surface that you don't expect, and I can't imagine that an app would necessarily pick up on that and know how to deal with it.
No, and I think that's right too. And, you know, we've also heard stories of people that have sent things to their chatbot therapist, which may indicate distress or other negative emotions, and the cue has been missed entirely, because as we know, these chatbots are only relying on recognition of patterns in language. So if they don't recognise the language pattern, you're quite right, they miss the cue. Now, in the fine print of a mental health app, there's a whole lot of disclosures about this. We're not providing a medical service. We're not providing a diagnostic service. We take no responsibility for adverse outcomes of you, the consumer, using that app. That's all hidden in the background, but there's very little warning up front when people sign up. I mean, they might be told that the app doesn't have a suicide prevention feature, but often that's as far as it goes. These other adverse consequences simply aren't disclosed.
That's really interesting. Should we be regulating them, Jeannie?
Yes, we should be regulating them. If they are holding out, they hold themselves out. The what we call the sort of headline message when you look at mental health apps is reduce anxiety, improve sleep, feel calmer and more focused. Those are all claims about mental health. And yet the apps, most of them are not regulated as medical devices or medical processes. If they're going to hold themselves out as dealing with mental health, then I think they should be subject to regulation as medical providers.
Jeannie, great to chat with you. Thanks for joining us on Drive today.
It's always a pleasure.
Thank you. That is Jeannie Marie Patterson, Professor of Law at the University of Melbourne.
Joy Drive on Joy 94.9 FM in Melbourne, Joy on your digital radio, iHeartRadio, TuneIn.com or the Joy app. No matter where you are.
This podcast was produced by Joy Media. You can support Joy's diverse sound and diverse community this June by donating to Joy Radiothon 2024. Go to joy.org.au/radiothon. And remember, we all flourish with joy.